You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Aiden Mortensen on KOAL 107.3 FM at 7:50 AM.
Welcome back in to Drive Time Sports here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. We are live from the Sutherland Studios, and every once in a while, we get to do something pretty cool. We love talking about sports here. We love analyzing what's happening on the field, but there's no better way to get a perspective than by talking to the athletes themselves. And we talk local, we talk state, we talk national sometimes, and today is one of those rare exceptions where we do get to speak on the national scene. Over the phone joining us now, we are joined by Ben Zobrist. You may recognize his name for either his time with the Tampa Bay Rays, the Kansas City Royals, or, of course, the Chicago Cubs. Two times World Series champion and the 2016 World Series MVP. And we're bringing him on today to discuss his life, career, and most importantly, his new book, Prepare for the Pressure, 9 Strategies to Be Courageous, Consistent, and Resilient When It Matters Most. Ben, it's a pleasure to have you on today. Thanks so much for taking the time to come talk to us. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
So I guess a good place for us to start is, what was the catalyst that made you want to sit down, put pen to paper, and write this book now? And was it a therapeutic experience for you to put, you know, a lot of these lessons you've learned over the course of your life and career onto paper?
Yeah, I do. I'll answer that last question first. I do think it was a little therapeutic to be able to put it to paper. I had been speaking about these things for at least a few years now. So I retired in 19, took a couple years from not even watching sports, just to kind of get away from it. But I joined a couple mental health organizations, and I saw the issues that were going on, and I realized, you know, with my own experiences around anxiety and depression, that this is something that athletes need to talk about and we need to help other athletes deal with, right? And I saw a gap in kind of what is out there, especially for youth athletes, not just the athletes but the parents and the coaches, in regard to, like, the emotional skills necessary to work through the sports experience. I mean, it's a fun experience, it's amazing, it's a joy, but it also can be really toxic and challenging at times, right? So I had started speaking about these things, mental and emotional skills. I did a lot of work myself to kind of work through some of my challenges. And I was like, man, I got to deliver this back into the sports culture in some way. And so I had been speaking about it and had a publisher come to me and say, hey, it's been 10 years since you guys won with the Cubs. Let's bring it out next summer. And wrote the book last year, and it was a really fun, you know, creative experience for me.
You know, it's definitely always fun to see athletes be able to give their perspective on these issues. And like you mentioned, lots of these issues are pretty pertinent, especially in the mental health world, in youth sports. And one experience that you've spoken about previously is your experience after your final high school game, sitting in your car, driving around, thinking that your career is done. And this is a place where a lot of young athletes have found themselves before. As you look back on that moment now, if you could go back in time, what would you tell that young Ben in that moment?
I would tell him to be patient and not think he knows what the future is going to hold, right? Because there was definitely things that I wouldn't have believed if someone would have told me at the time, right? But the good thing is that regardless of whether or not you're a young guy that can believe what you're capable of, there are people around you who believe in you. And that's one thing my high school coach Gold, who called me and said, hey, you know, there's a scout day, I think you should pay $50 and go over to it. You never know. And, you know, he had this belief in me, and the college coach that saw me over at that scout day, you know, of course I had to take the risk of going and doing one more day of baseball, but that college coach saw me, and Coach Johnson, you know, believed in me too. And so that's the beautiful thing about the faith that it takes to move on in your life, is sometimes you may not be able to feel it for yourself, but you got to borrow that from somebody around you who believes you.
Now, I think we can pull a lot of lessons from your career, not only in terms of preparation, but having the willingness to do things that others necessarily weren't wanting to do. You earned the reputation as a super utility player, and in your book, you state that pressure requires us to cultivate versatility rather than mere repetition. How does being adaptable across different roles in life prepare you to handle the pressures that may come your way?
Well, adaptability is such a key important part of emotional intelligence as well, and it's really the next frontier, I think, in regards to what a player can be, you know, from where they're at. And so once you're a young player and you realize, like, I'm pretty good at this thing, regardless of how good you are talent-wise, you're going to have to put in the practice and the effort. And then ultimately, you're going to have to adapt to the challenges that come at you. And your body's going to have to adapt, and your mind's going to have to adapt. And so that piece for me was really the thing that brought, that took me to the next level as a professional player, because I had the ability to think, you know what, be positive about, hey, if they're giving me a chance through this other means, even though I might be uncomfortable while I'm trying to adapt, I know that this might open up more opportunities for me, more possibilities for me. And so when you can start to expand yourself in that way and adapt yourself in that way, mentally and physically, that's when you start to open up the possibilities of, and your limits, your ceiling kind of raises higher. And that's the beauty of being adaptable and flexible.
Now, like we mentioned, you did just about everything in terms of fielding in your career, playing all over the place, and you were a switch hitter on top of that. But looking at a typical pregame routine for you, what did that look like, and how did it differ from, you know, someone who was playing second base every day or someone who was expecting to play third base? Having to switch back and forth between all these roles, how does your preparation differ in that regard?
Well, it definitely started prior to going out for batting practice, you know, with some of the things I would do in the training room to try to ready my body, because I was taking more reps than a lot of other people were. I was a switch hitter, so I was swinging the bat more. I was running around in BP more than most guys. There's three groups in most teams and in batting practice, and in I was in one hitting group, but the other two groups, I was jumping around all over the field. I'd take reps at second, I'd take reps at short, I'd take reps at third, I'd take reps at left, right, center. Wherever one of the other starters was not at that moment, like if they were hitting in that BP group, I would go to their position and try to get reps there so that if I got thrown in there quick during the game, I wouldn't feel super uncomfortable, and I would have bats, balls off the bat, or I'd do early work with coaches out there in that position to make sure that I was prepared.
Now, in this book, you introduce an equation for high achievers. Passion plus practice plus perseverance is greater than pressure. Now, most people understand practice and its importance, but you know that a player has to pursue that passion, and you say it to the point of discomfort. And also, you present this idea of the unseen practice. In your experience, what does this point of discomfort look like, and what role does the work no one else sees play into this?
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to make yourself uncomfortable. And I think nowadays it's so hard for kids to be doing work when no one notices. You know, they're not used to being alone, and they usually have a coach or someone else like putting the ball on the tee for them or throwing them or something like that, right? So it's like to go and find a batting cage or go and throw into a wall or throw into a net all by yourself. You know, it is, those can be some of the loneliest moments as an athlete, but they really tell you who you are inside, right? Because what do you really want this just because everybody else is watching, or do you want it regardless of whether anybody's watching? And when you know that you love it enough to practice it and you're persevering through that discomfort, through those dark nights, those long nights, you know, long mornings in the cage or wherever you're doing your extra effort. And that's the thing that makes you know that you're going to persevere in those difficult times in your career, right? So there's going to be ups and downs, and there's going to be moments where everybody else is going to quit. And if you're able to just stay a little longer, you know, and stay focused just a little bit more, to practice a little bit more, to persevere a little bit longer, you have the chance of making a career out of it and playing for a long, long time.
And, you know, that's what I love about that equation in particular, is that it's not just applicable to the world of sports, but you can apply it to your professional life. These are principles that carry on year after year after year. And there's some things that are really going to benefit people as they read your book. Again, our guest, Ben Zobrist, 2-time World Series champion and 2016 World Series MVP. We're talking about his book, Prepare for the Pressure, 9 Strategies to Be Courageous, Consistent, and Resilient When It Matters Most. Now, let's talk about your playing career for a little bit. You're a rare player who won back-to-back World Series rings with 2 separate teams. So you started out with the Royals in 2015, acquired mid-season. When you stepped into a clubhouse that was fresh off a World Series loss the year before in 2014, what was it like going into that locker room, and how quickly were you able to acclimate with the team?
Well, those guys were amazing, and they were already a winning culture over there because they had won the year before. They fully expected to get back to the World Series, to get back to the playoffs. They were already going to win their division. It was easy for them to really know their identity before I ever showed up, and I was like basically there coming in the All-Star, or not after the All-Star break at the trade deadline. They knew I was there to help them win and take it over the top. So really, my goal wasn't to help them get to the playoffs. They were already going to make the playoffs. The goal was, let me prove to them that I can be a part of this lineup, I can assimilate into their culture and what they've built here, and ultimately, we're all going to be on the same page by the time we get to October, and we got to win there. We got to win there. So that was my goal. I think I was able to fit in pretty quickly, but they were a great bunch and a great group that were able to like open the doors with arms wide open. So when you got great people around the clubhouse consistently, and you're going to just add to the equation with whatever you bring to the table, everybody was excited because the goal was not for any one player to be great. The goal was for the team to win a championship.
And you look at that 2015 World Series run with the Royals, lots of comebacks occurring along the way. You guys were a gritty, scrappy bunch. And the next season, you sign with the Cubs in the midst of a historic title drought at the time. And you guys were able to end that curse and bring a championship to the city of Chicago. But heading into that season, was the title drought something that hung over you and your teammates' head? Was that something you discussed in the locker room? Or did you keep the pressure and weight of this away from your mind?
Well, I would say there's no one had to tell us what was at stake, you know, in Chicago. Obviously, we all knew that it had been 108 years, but we knew that this team, unlike a lot of the other teams in some of their history, just really like was ready, you know, ready to take it to the next level. And I had been around enough winning ball clubs. I knew kind of the mix of young players, veteran players, star players, role players, you know, bullpen, all the kind of things that go into making a great team, right? And then on top of that, you got to stay healthy. So there's nothing guaranteed even getting to the playoffs, even though you know you're on paper, you're a great team. But I think what was special about that team is from the moment that we showed up, like we knew the target was on our back, but we believed that we were going to win the World Series. We believed that we were the best team. We didn't think there was any curse or anything that was going to keep us from doing that if we did what we were capable of doing. If everybody just does their job. That was the great thing about that team is all you had to do was your job. Nobody has to try to do anything more than that. And that there's something really beautiful when you know everybody that's coming to work that day is there to just put their head down, do their job really well, and enjoy the process with it, and that's how we won so much.
And it's something, it goes back to something you've discussed before, and it's something that you discuss in depth in your book, but it's that idea of being present for these moments. You know, oftentimes, especially in the world of sports, it feels like we're looking ahead either to what comes next. You know, I messed up this at bat, what comes next? You know, looking back at the past, what could I have done better? But you speak about being present in the moment and how advantageous that can be when you're facing immense pressure like you guys were in that World Series.
Yeah, well, Joe Maddon for me is the biggest guy in regard to that. He talked about never let the pressure exceed the pleasure. Joe believed that the moment is best experienced by staying very, very present in it, right? And so you're going to be the best version of yourself if you're fully locked into that moment and you're not worried about yesterday or worried about tomorrow. And when everybody gets on the same page and staying focused on the present moment, some really, really special things can happen, you know. And we saw it in 16. We saw it with many of those players in 17, 18, 19 while I was still there. You know, these young guys that just stayed where they were. You know, stay in the moment, stay focused on getting better. I mean, we saw some really special performances by Chris Bryant, Javi Baez, Schwarber, Rizzo, you name it, these guys that we were around, and they were just special, special players. They've had very long careers. And those guys learned early on, that's how you do it. You got to stay present in the moment, stay focused on that. And when you do that, and when everybody does that on the same page, special things happen.
Now, your book opens with an introduction that has quickly become one of my favorite introductions to any book I have read. It's a bit of a stream of conscious. We're walking in your mind as you step to the plate in Game 7 of that 2016 World Series, top of the 10th, and you're facing off against Brian Shaw, and it leads to you driving that double down the left field line. You bring in the run, claim the 7-6 lead in Game 7, and watching back the video, you stand on second base, you're pumping your arms, you look over, Anthony Rizzo in disbelief. Did it cross your mind in that moment that you had potentially altered Chicago sports history forever? Or what's the thought process like after securing a big play like that?
I mean, I was in shock that I was in the center of it, you know, to be honest. I always saw myself as a role player everywhere I went, and I'm like, I'm happy not being the star or the center of anything. And there were a few times in my career I hit a walk-off hit or something like that, and those were special moments. But I was not the guy. I'm not the guy to get the big hit in Game 7 of the World Series. I'm the guy that's going to have a decent series for you and help you score runs, you know, and help you play solid defense. And the fact that I just got put in that position and got a hit that really was part of that, I knew it in the moment. I looked over at Rizzo, he's holding his head, and you know, I was like, that's forever going to be the biggest thing I ever do athletically.
And it was a moment that it's still...
I knew that immediately. I'm like, okay, like, and I've had a good series, like, I could end up, if we win this, I could end up being the World Series MVP. Like, this is crazy. No?
You know, it's a spectacular moment to watch. I remember watching that moment when I was in junior high and watching this drought look like it was finally going to come to an end. Truly an incredible moment. And I guess another follow-up question to that is that moment loud? You secure the big hit. Do you hear all the noise in the stadium, or is it more like the movies where it feels silent?
It really did. While I was doing it, it felt silent. When it woke up to me is when I jumped in the air, pumped my fist, turned around to that team, and then looked around. Because, like, in that moment, there was nothing else to focus on in between the next pitch. It was like, I'm in the center of the watching sports world right now, you know? And I could hear the screams. I could feel the emotion and the energy in that entire place. And also, like, I think the guttural relief of Cub fans everywhere in that moment, if that makes sense. You know, it was just such a feeling of relief for everybody at the same time as elation and like, okay, let's not blow this, boys, you know. It's like we had already blown one lead and it was like we're gonna keep this one, you know.
And, you know, you finish out the Game 7, you don't blow the lead a second time, and you get announced as World Series MVP. What's the immediate thought after being announced? Was it disbelief? Was it shock? You mentioned that you kind of figured this could be the play that cemented that, but what runs through your mind as you are it's actually solidified that you are that World Series MVP?
I mean, I think what ran through my mind is what does this mean? Like, what... Uh-oh, like, what am I going to have to do? You know, like, now I've got to hold this mantle of something. And I think that's where I started feeling a different kind of pressure than I ever felt before. You know, it was like, oh, shoot, like, I got to represent now. Like, everybody, you know, so I'm going to have to go to Jimmy Fallon and go to Conan O'Brien and go to Disney World on a private jet and do all these things, you know, like, I was like the parade marshal at their big parade in Chicago in November, and it was like, whoa, like all this stuff that I'm not used to being in the front of.
Now, you mentioned that creates a lot of pressure. Well, how does that pressure differ from what you felt athletically, and how did you overcome that pressure in the months and years leading that came after that World Series win?
Honestly, well, it's more of an internal pressure, obviously, and it's a pressure that if you're not paying attention to what's going on the inside, it can mount and feel even greater than everything going on the outside, you know, and I think that's what was taking place for me is I was realizing, man, I held a lot in, and I was ready. What would have been best probably for me at the time is to go, like, be alone in the woods for a week, you know? Just kind of like get in nature and breathe the air in and like let myself come down from that. But instead, I like jumped on all those planes and tried to say yes to as many things as I could. And man, it burnt me out quick, right? It overwhelmed me quick. And this is one thing I talk about when I go speak about this is, you know, I was on Athletic Everest at the top of it, right? But the problem with that is you can't breathe at the top of that mountain. You know, and no one really teaches you how to descend, you know. Everybody focuses on the ascent, but the descent is just as important, if not more important, because that's how you get back to safety and back to ground zero eventually, right? And And, man, I was really unprepared for that kind of internal pressure.
Now, speaking of internal pressure, I'm sure that's something a lot of people can relate to, whether it be in their professional lives, their personal lives. And you write about putting self-awareness to work. So many people recognize that they are stressed, but they don't know what to do with that awareness that they're stressed. You know, what steps did you take to, you know, help start your descent from that peak in a healthy way, you know, because it can reach a very unhealthy buildup? How did you personally navigate trying to get down from that ultimate high?
Yeah, well, initially I didn't do it very well, and I started needing to see a therapist really quickly of like, wow, I had some suicidal ideation. I had panic attacks. I was like not sleeping. I was trying to figure out why my system was, I was like, I should be happy. But even that self-shame of looking myself in the mirror and going, you should be happy, that's the self-talk that was kind of self-defeating at the time. Even though I had won things, it wasn't helping me in the long run. And so what I learned I needed to be doing that I wish I had been doing at the time, and we train people to do this now in my nonprofit, is you have to do quality check-in work on a regular daily basis. You know, and that means you're checking, where's my internal state? What am I really feeling? And you have to have some sort of emotions chart you're working off. It can't just be like, oh, I feel fine. I feel good. I feel bad. No, it's got to be like descriptive words. And everybody that hears it has to know what you're saying. Doesn't mean you have to give all the context about why. It just means you have to say it out loud, because there is scientific evidence that if you just start processing some of those feelings, it takes a little bit of the pressure off, you know? And so regardless of whether you're at home and feeling pressure at home, or you're feeling pressure at work, or you're feeling pressure as a kid on a test or a performance, you have to have a safe place to process your emotion where no one's trying to fix it. You know, it's normal to feel hurt, lonely, sad, fear, all the things, shame even. It's normal to feel those things in different times. But you shouldn't have to try to fix yourself at all times. Yes, you're trying to fix mistakes on the field, but it doesn't mean you have to fix yourself as a human when you're feeling those things. Some of it will dissipate over time just by being willing to share it in a safe place.
As we look at this topic of pressure, it feels like one of the central themes that your book revolves around is, will pressure crush you or will it change you? As you look back at the entirety of your life, the highs, the lows, from sitting in the car thinking your career was over in high school to making the MLB, the championships, the World Series MVP, the pressure that followed. As you look back on all of this, how has this pressure helped shape you, and how has it changed Ben Zobrist as a man?
Well, I'm grateful for every bit of it now, which you aren't necessarily feeling that in the moment. I'm grateful for every bit of it, and it does give me an opportunity to understand, you know, like, who was going to relate to me when I was winning the World Series MVP and I had all things going for me in my life, right? But when you start opening up to the vulnerability and the transparency of the challenges that you're facing and the struggle that you feel on a regular basis, it really does change your gratitude level, and it changes your connection with people. And people are able to say, man, he gets it. He understands me. Even though he's had these really cool experiences, he's also like us, you know, like we're human beings carrying around these heroes' capes at times. And sometimes you just got to put it away and say, look, I'm struggling with the same things, and we're working through this together. And ultimately in the book, we talk about, it culminates in chapter 9 with connection, because healthy connection is really the antidote to a lot of our problems.
Now, Ben, where can we find more of you, and where can we purchase your book, Prepare for the Pressure? Because this has been a very enlightening conversation, and lots of incredible lessons available in your book.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's found anywhere where books are sold right now, for the most part. I do a lot of my book shopping on Amazon, but there's prepareforthepressure.com is a website we have. You can also find links to it at my nonprofit site, championforward.org, and any of those places to find links to where you can buy it.
Well, Ben, it was a pleasure to catch up with you today, sir. Thank you so much for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Again, our guest, Ben Zobrist, two-time World Series champion and 2016 World Series MVP, joining us to talk about his new book, Prepare for the Pressure, available wherever books are sold. We're going to bring it to the local scene in our next segment, coming back to wrap things up. We're going to catch up with Cade Brazier, and we're going to be talking about one of the area's favorite charity events. That's the Tea Buckets Memorial Tournament, taking place this year on August 8th. Right around the corner, going to be a good time. Cade's going to be joining us to talk all about it right here on Drive Time Sports.